It's time for Twig. This week in Google, coming up, Google's working on a debit card to rival Apple's card. Palantir will track COVID-19 for the Health and Human Services. And is it okay for Tubi to use credit bureau information to feed you ads? It's all coming up next on Twig. This Week in Google comes to you from Twit's LastPass Studios. Stay in control when it comes to your company's access points and authentication. LastPass makes enterprise-level security simple for your remote workforce. Check out LastPass.com/Twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 556, recorded Wednesday, April 22nd, 2020. Internet pretzels. This episode of This Week in Google is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter knows we have to work to stay strong, connected, and focused. To find the right people for the right jobs, go to ZipRecruiter.com/work together. It's time for Twig, This Week in Google, the show where we cover the latest news from the Googleverse with Mr. Jeff Jarvis, Craig Tao Knight, Craig, professor of journalism at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism, and the Tao Knight Center for Entrepreneurial Journalism at the City University of New York. I got him in there.
Wayward, white-haired people.
Uh-huh. And thank you, Craig Newmark, for giving them a lot of money so Jeff could do his job. Is that a chair? Do you have a chair?
That I'm sitting on, yes.
No, he's the Craig Newmark chair of something.
Oh, do I have a chair?
Oh, no, the Tao Knight chair.
I have the Leonard Tao chair.
He is the
Journalism Innovation.
He's sitting in the chair that Leonard Tao endowed at the Craig Newmark Endowed.
Newmark Graduate School of Journalism. In the Tao Knight Center, which I direct, at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York.
He's a big shot. He's a big shot, former TV Guide critic as well. Also, which we say, just to cut him down a few pegs so he doesn't get a big head. Also, Stacey Higginbotham.
Big pink head.
Who is our IoT guru, our chip maven. She is at StaceyOnIoT.com and does the IoT podcast with Kevin Toefel. You can find that there. Hello, Stacey.
Is there a feminine form of guru? Was there?
That's why I said maven.
Well, maven, guru. I accept guru. I don't
know. You should. I'm just curious whether they used to be
gendered.
Feminine form.
Like a guruette? That's really.
No, please do not call me any ets.
Guruette would be terrible. That would be a guruess.
Although gurus tend to abuse their followers and can be problematic.
True.
So maybe I don't want to be a guru.
You could be a shaman.
Shaman.
I don't think I smoke enough or drink any weird teas.
Okay.
And I'm definitely not into sweat lodges.
If you don't drink
but people on the show, you didn't see this before the show. She snacks weird.
That's not weird. She's a little chicken.
Weird. That's not weird. It's
chicken.
Just, it's healthy protein. And
cubes of chicken for a snack. A snack is an excuse to have something that you shouldn't have. I had two peanut butter cookies.
Oh.
That's a snack.
Oh. Lisa ordered
internet
pretzels today. We got our internet pretzels.
What are internet pretzels?
I don't know. But I've never bought internet pretzels on the internet, but apparently that's what we do these days. That's our new thing.
When I lived in South Jersey, did you know that besides being able to get milk delivered, you could get pretzels and chips delivered?
Well, there's a story behind that.
Charlie's Chips, right?
We used to have a milkman, too, in Providence. We still do. My mom has one in Cranston. But what happened, it was...
Oh, we have one on Bainbridge.
Yeah, I bet you do. Oh. But what happened is it got less and less lucrative merely to bring milk, cheese, and butter. So they started adding products. And I remember in Rhode Island, they started adding milk shampoo and milk conditioner. And, you know, you just got to kind of, if you're going to deliver stuff, you got to expand.
True to the brand, yeah.
Yeah. So I do.
Reminds me of the Schitt's Creek episode where he's like, he's got body milk in his store and everyone keeps coming up to him and they're like, can you drink this? And he's like, it's body milk. It says so on the thing. So now I'm like,
can you drink it?
It's, doesn't answer
the question.
Can you drink?
You can't drink
it. No, the answer is no, because it's body milk, not drinking
milk. Not throat milk. Okay.
Throat milk.
Throat milk. Okay. All right. Okay. Episode today, 556. In our never-ending quest to find stories to talk about. Because, as you know, times have changed and there's not a lot of news, but there is some Google news. Google is, according to The Verge, working on its own debit card. Now, the weird thing is Google used to have a credit card. I remember getting
it. Right, and they stopped it. Yes, stopped. I did too. Yeah.
So Google, this is short-sighted from Chaim Gartenberg. They're coming back, although it wasn't a debit card. And I guess the Apple card, which is Goldman Sachs Bank,
fancy,
which is weird. Fancy. Yeah. I don't know.
Don't you have to have a certain credit rating to get it?
No. Well,
and wasn't there a big kerfuffle around men getting it and women not getting it?
A couple of people, Steve Wozniak and David Heinemeier Hansen, who created Ruby on Rails, two well-known geek icons, both said, I got a much better credit limit than my wife, who has my same finances because she's my wife. But anyway, Apple says, yeah, well, we talked about this. The ways of the credit score are varied and mysterious. But Apple said, okay, we'll fix that. You know, Lisa got a better credit limit than I did on mine. So,
well, somehow that's not surprising.
So it's probably just based on your credit. I mean, like, I have better credit.
It's personal credit, I would guess. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you're Steve Wozniak,
she's not buying the $1,600 Thermomix.
Exactly. Google wants to do a Google branded smart debit card. You know, actually, the Apple card, which I've had for a while, works quite well. You get cash back. The nice thing is it's tied to the watch, which is kind of something, I guess Google still has Android Wear, but does anybody wear Android Wear? But the idea of
But they might close Fitbit eventually.
Yeah,
and
maybe.
And the new Fitbit does have pay in it.
Yeah. So nowadays, not touching money or credit cards, but contactless payment at the grocery store, if you have to go, is to be embraced. So maybe this is a COVID thing. I don't know.
The guy came today to do our maintenance.
Data thing.
I think it's a data thing. You're right.
So you can get a lot of information. And like Facebook even has deals with credit card companies to say, hey, what are people buying? And so I think Google's like, oh, I would love to know. And about tying that back possibly into advertisements, you could actually say, hey, this person saw this ad here.
They already do that. They already do that.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, but they have Google Pay, just like Apple Pay and Samsung Pay. But normally those work by you attach your existing credit cards to it. So what's different about Apple's credit card is you can use that as your primary payment. Apple's is an actual charge card. It's a credit card. You rack up a bill, you pay it in the month. Google supposedly, according to The Verge, is a debit card. They're going to partner with Citi, Stanford Federal Credit Union. It's a Visa. But most debit cards are either a Visa or a MasterCard. But it would take it right out of your bank account as opposed to adding up the charges till the end of the month. It will do virtual card numbers. That's one of the real selling points on the Apple credit card, is that the merchant doesn't get any information about you. They don't even get your credit card number. They get a token, and they don't get your address, your real name, or any of that stuff. And, of course, merchants hate that. Google apparently wants to do the same thing. But you know who gets the information? Apple and Google, in Google's case. So it's not like they're giving up any information. Customers will be able to use the Google Pay app to lock their card in the event of theft or loss, according to The Verge, or lock the account entirely. Google's app reportedly, and there is a picture of the app, so this leak is pretty well sourced, will reportedly allow customers to easily track purchases using Google Maps and its database of retailers. Would you get a Google debit card or not?
I don't like debit cards.
Why not?
Because I don't like having a PIN number.
Right.
It is the stupidest reason.
Right. Some people don't like it.
I pay my credit cards in full, so the
rules,
I'm like,
eh. It's just, that's like a debit card then, right? The rules protecting you, I seem to remember, with debit cards are not as strict as with credit cards, right? So in theory, you can get financially hurt more by a debit card. although most banks voluntarily limit your liability with a debit card, I think. I don't know. I don't mind a debit card. In fact, I kind of like it because I know it's going to come right out of my bank account and I'm not going to have to. But I do. I pay off my credit cards too. So, yeah. The Apple Card I do use. I like it. Partly because it changes color depending on what you buy.
Oh, my goodness.
Talk about gamifying something. When you buy something with your Apple Card, if it's a grocery store, it's brown. If it's electronics, it's blue. So you get this nice rainbow.
Didn't you know what you just bought?
It's just a gamify thing. That's all. It doesn't make a lot of sense. Let me see if I can open my wallet and show you what color. What color is your Apple Card? That could be a novel.
It changes mine
looks like it's slightly stained. Can you show my over-the-shoulder shot, Jeff?
No, you don't want it. Is your number on there?
No, of course not. It's an Apple Card. So you see, it looks like a little halo. But if I were to buy something at Apple, there'd be another color in there. And then when you pay it off, it gets white again.
That's utterly useless.
No, it's not. You know what?
It's fine.
It makes me want to buy stuff from different places so I can get prettier.
And he's telling us about it, and other people are like, that's fun. I'm totally going to go get an Apple Card. It's good.
And you get 1%, 2%, or 3% back depending on where you buy it. Although I think Apple is getting more generous with the cash back during COVID. I think they're giving you more.
Is it at the Apple Store?
Yes, you get most if you buy it from Apple, yes. So since the stuff I buy from Apple tends to be high ticket items, because Apple doesn't sell no cheap stuff, you get you get 3% off your Apple stuff.
I'm pretty sure I got a case there for under $40 once.
You get 3% off a thing that has a markup of about 80%.
Yeah, exactly.
Good work.
Why do you think they do that? Hey, are you a socialist? Apple's making some dough.
Ever more, yes.
Yeah, nowadays we're all maybe tending in a little that direction. Google says it's now displaying information for over 2,000 COVID-19 testing centers across 43 states.
Not that you can go, but...
Yeah, I saw that on the press conference, the president was showing a map of Maryland and how there was all these testing centers and saying, I don't know why the governor had to buy tests from South Korea. Look at all these testing centers. Maybe it was
the cruelest part. Well, not that there's many cruel things, especially if you're African American or Latino or disabled in this country. But the testing world alone, the cruelest thing is making people who are sick stay overnight in their cars so they can get tested for disease.
Is the line that long? You have to sleep in your car to get in the
a lot of places. It has been.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially in hard hit areas.
In a sensible world, you'd call your doctor. And the doctor would say, those symptoms, you need to come in right away and we'll test you.
That's not how Boston has an app. So in Boston, there's an app. You go on, you put your symptoms in and you can get an appointment. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Massachusetts is also hiring contact tracers. So they're ahead in a lot of things.
Verily, Google's sister company is offering free tests to people in parts of California, New Jersey, and New York, and Pennsylvania, but you have to do an online screening, a symptom screening. We are not close to although in some areas, I guess you can get a test, anybody can get a test, but we're not, most of the time right now, you get tested if you have symptoms, right? You know what I got?
Well, which is illogical in and of itself, because what you're going to have to do to open up again.
Eventually, yes.
Is you're going to have to test those places you don't know have the disease.
That's right, because of the asymptomatic. Yeah. Component.
Well, A and pre-symptomatic, both.
Yeah.
My doctors and my Twitter list are very careful to distinguish between the two.
Asymptomatic means you go through the whole disease with no symptoms at all.
Yeah, and there's much debate as to how prevalent that is, if at all.
Right.
Pre-symptomatic is that you're contagious 2 or 3 days before you start showing symptoms.
Right.
Oh, it could be up to a week, right?
And that, mm-hmm. You know what? That's not unusual. There are a number of illnesses that's the case. That's not an unusual thing.
It's a pretty long incubation period.
It causes
where you're
problems
shedding the virus.
Because you're communicative, but you don't know you are, and you're walking around and all that. That's why we're all staying home, right? communicable.
Yes.
You bet your bippy.
That's why we're all staying home.
I'm so tired of staying home.
Are you? Where would you go? Because you work at home, right?
Well, like I, you know, at least twice a week, I would go work with a friend at a coffee shop.
Oh, that's nice.
Just,
you know, for an hour or two.
Oh, that's so
Forget it. It's over. It's gone. Ever. Yeah. Life has changed.
Actually,
do you think, when will we ever be able to do that? I look at now and watch movies.
Vaccine. If we get a vaccine.
If we do.
Not until then.
I watch.
If we do, and it's an if.
It is an if. We don't have vaccines for HIV or colds or a lot of things. I watch movies and I see people doing normal, what we used to do.
Yeah, I know.
Walking down the street and I look at it. Hey, guys, separate. You could get. It's so funny how quickly that gets in your mind, isn't it?
It is. Our dean is figuring out how to do social distancing at the school.
Right.
Right. What if some people start coming back at some point?
What
and,
are they
and it's hard to imagine.
They're about to reopen Las Vegas.
Have you
Vegas.
Seen the 6 foot office?
The 6 foot office. No. What's that?
It is by, is it Gensler, I think? Hold on.
Here it is. Gensler. I've got it. I'll put it up.
You found it?
Yep.
It's an architectural firm. But what
Cushman
they did.
Cushman & Wakefield.
Oh, Cushman & Wakefield. Sorry.
That's, that's a developer.
Yeah, developer. So yeah. It consists of a 6 foot quick scan.
So they have a video.
Oh, okay. Here, let's.
Oh, that's the video.
Watch the video to learn more about. Is this going to be our future office workspace? Hello.
Well, some parts of it are.
It does look like billions, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a fancy office. I have a lot of questions about this intro segment. Oh,
looks just like billions.
With the ambition to get the world safer and sooner back at work.
So you enter, you do a little purification, you get a little Purell shot, just like a cruise ship. You walk down a complete. Oh, look, did you see their lines? On the floor?
You wait 6 hours to get one person on an elevator.
Okay, nobody can go in with you.
Yes.
Okay.
Is at the center of what's next.
So you have to step on that circle. There's a circle in the elevator. Stick to the rules. Follow the signs. Welcome to our new fascist state. Right? One way only. Take your piece of paper. Bring it to your workplace.
Oh, my.
You have to. What is the piece of. Oh, the piece of paper goes under your computer.
Piece of paper is, yeah, it's your hot desking kind of thing.
So that's.
So, and this is really interesting. Oh, the carpet. You'll see it in the, video in a second.
Walk the office. Wait a minute. Do you see one of our new
rules?
You
only walk one direction.
You can only walk clockwise. What does it even look like to walk clockwise? That's so you don't. Oh, I get
those
it.
Those two women were a lot closer than 6 feet.
Yeah, but they're not facing each other. Oh, they're but they have a plastic.
They are.
No, they're far apart. They're far apart. They're 6 feet apart. And then these circles in the video
I'm
underneath.
I'm 6 feet tall. Carpet. That's not 6 feet. I know 6 feet.
But there was
That's
a plastic barrier, too, between them.
Well, yeah, like air doesn't go over it.
Hi there. Enter meeting rooms as indicated. This is such a dystopian future. This is out of Cushman & Wakefield, Netherlands. So the Netherlands, they don't mind. Okay,
what's
say
the
that you
point
put your,
of the what's the point of the piece of paper? I don't get it.
To isolate you from their desk.
Yeah, so you don't put your stuff on the desk.
This is terrifying.
So you don't get your germs.
This is terrifying.
So your keyboard and it goes schmitzing around all the time.
Why do they have couches? Well, there's no point in having a couch.
One person could sit on it. But yeah, so there's the office of the future. And I would add to that, if you want to get really crazy, what's going to happen is you're going to have cameras places.
Yeah.
You might even have badges like Estimote. I don't know if you saw, they have Bluetooth beacon badges now that for office, for industrial workers, but you could put it on an office. You wear this on your lanyard or as a thing around your neck and it'll beep. Whenever another beacon gets within 6 feet of you. So basically everyone has these. And so as you're walking around, if people get within your space bubble, you'll hear beep, 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 beep. And theirs will go beep, 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 beep. And you'll be all like, get away.
So my question, I have a couple of questions. First of all, we have been surprisingly compliant, right? I would have thought, especially in our individualistic United States of America, there would be more people saying, no, I ain't going to do that. But people have been, you walk down the streets of Petaluma.
Yeah, the nuts are very small in number.
They're and small
getting
groups.
Way too much coverage. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. But there's nothing else to talk about. TV has to do something. So we're pretty compliant. And I think that we might even do this The problem is, I think it gets in your head, and pretty soon you become a germaphobe. Like, you don't like if then the all clear sounds. You say, but I'm still going to go clockwise in my office and put a piece of paper down because it's safe. It's healthy. Here's the thing. Even though we've been compliant, I feel like people are going to go, no, I'm just going to get it. And if old people die, well, it's time. Do you think people are just going to rebel and say, screw it? You can't, this is too much.
Only if you're in Las Vegas.
That's about to happen in Las Vegas. They want to, yeah. I think May 1st, they want to reopen. What, do you only walk counterclockwise in the casino? Gamblers will love that. They're already compulsive. Gamblers will go, sure. If it improves my chances of winning, I'll do anything.
What if you're one of those people who feel that, you know, you've got to walk counterclockwise in order to win? That's going to be really upsetting.
There are going to be problems.
I think we will see some change. I do think, I mean, I've been thinking about what happens if we don't get a vaccine and people don't have immunity for very long with this, if at all, because we still don't actually know that.
That's the worst, by the way, worst case scenario.
That is the worst case
scenario. We can't prevent it and we don't get a treatment. It looks like we may have some treatments. That's good news. Not chloroquine, but we may have some treatments. That might be some good news. Maybe even the treatments involving plasma from people who've already survived it and have antibodies. There may be treatments. But let's say, worst case scenario, no treatments, no vaccine. This is the new normal.
So then I think what will happen is most white-collar work that can go remote will go remote. And I think you'll see, if children are less affected, you'll probably see schools open up with more social distancing. And we saw, I'm really curious to see what happens in Denmark. Teachers will have
Lord of the Flies.
Well,
there'll be no teachers.
I worry that they will not be able to touch the children.
Online. Honestly, I was surprised. My kid's been going to high school online, entirely online. He's a senior.
But your kid's in high school and my kid's in middle school. But at fifth grade, you can't stick a 10-year-old... Maybe a 10-year-old girl, but probably not.
Are they doing it now?
Somewhat, but now? They're not really. Mine is 13.
Oh, she's in middle school.
She's doing
right.
a great.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, a few years ago, no. And she's super conscientious. They just don't have the. They don't have the attention span. Parents don't have, and you know, not to mention the fact that we don't have broadband everywhere, which is another issue. I think testing, I think good contact tracing, if we can develop something that is a more immediate test, you might, you know, checking for fevers constantly, every day.
Carson's wife, Kimmy, teaches kindergarten, and he says they are not learning as much as they should be. I think it's really there's going to be a generation with a lost year of schooling or more.
And we just got to deal with that. We got to say that you went through a lot, and that's what it is.
The kids are resilient.
For all the seniors
the
graduating
thing.
Without walking. Paul Thurrott's daughter graduated from high school. But you're right. It's people suffered in World War II. And then the whole generation had stories to tell for decades.
I just put up an MIT technology review piece on machine learning could check if you're social distancing properly at work.
I feel like there's also and you'll have a big klaxon that goes, get apart.
Well, it'll also be cameras and you'll have a little this. You have little green squares and red squares. Red square is bad.
Yeah. I think that it's possible to design all of this and sensible. And I don't think it'll happen because it's too dystopian. And I think at some point people are just going to say, oh, the heck with it.
I think it will happen in grocery stores and retail settings for sure. So we already at our grocery stores, you can only walk certain ways. There's one-way aisles, right?
Oh, that's good. And the theory being if you're cross, you might breathe on each other. So this way you're at least breathing down somebody's neck instead of breathing in their face. I'm going to have to get a neck mask now.
Yes. I think we'll see.
And what happens to the economy if this becomes 2 years of the new normal or more? What happens to the economy?
I don't think we'll grow for a while unless we want to invest into something.
And what about all the people who are unemployed? We're going to have universal basic income.
Oh, yeah, there's major shifts of wealth.
Yeah, I think there's, I mean, we have enough with taxation. We could, we have a lot of levers that currently we're not pulling. But I also think this is a good opportunity for, I mean, think about the things we're suddenly like, oh, crap, we need to do this. Think about revamping healthcare and what that might look like. Think about boosting broadband and investing in that. Those are going to be jobs. Think about dealing with climate change and electrification. We actually could invest in those areas and build a better long-term everything and create jobs for people.
But we've built an entire economy essentially based on service.
Yeah.
That's really the U.S. economy. You know, it's interesting because I've already thought about this for TWIT, and we seem to be handling work at home fine. I think we can continue indefinitely doing what we're doing. It's not comfortable or easy. You know, normally on Wednesday, you've been here for that, Jeff. I think Stacy has it too. We have lunch in the conference room. We get food and then it's very social. Everybody loves it. So they did it today via Zoom. I don't know how it went. I missed it, but I don't.
Well, I know what Karsten had. I know what Karsten had.
What? Chicken?
I said bitterly.
What?
Queso from Chipotle?
No. He said it to me. I sent it to you. Hold on.
What? I don't know.
I was like, we don't know.
He said he had Taco Bell. Did you get Taco Bell. One of the drinks from the cantina?
Karsten sent me a picture of him eating Taco Bell because that's how cool that's Karsten funny. Is.
We adore Karsten.
Patrick had mini ravioli out of a can. Patrick, I guess so.
I've worked for three different companies. So The Daily Deal in New York, Time Inc. and GigaOM. And things like Slack, actually, remote work is, you can still have social and create bonds of friendship or whatever virtually. And I mean, yes, I also saw those people two, maybe three times a year for events. But even if I hadn't, I really got a chance to get to know those people over the, you know, social channels. And that was part of the culture. Like I noticed when I got to Fortune, it was really weird to establish myself as a virtual person there because they had already established a culture of physically present in the New York office.
They were mostly in the office at Fortune. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I attended our editorial meetings, you know, every day in via conference call, and you know, but I think it can be done, and I think people can. I mean, I'm still really good friends with all of my GigaOM colleagues, again, I didn't see them.
I've only met you once in person, Stacy.
Yeah, that's a good point. Right here.
You've learned to hate me without ever being in the same place as me.
I want to physically hit you at least once a week. I mean, what? There you go.
What more could you ask for? So,
actually, when I met you in person, Leo, I thought you were a lot nicer than you are on the show.
I have different duties on the show.
I was like, Leo is a delightful human being who isn't trying to poke me all the time, being like,
my duty is to make the show interesting, and I don't care about your feelings. It's funny because, in person, I am not a confrontational person at all. I just want everybody to like me.
It's like Howard Stern. Exactly like Howard Stern.
It's funny because when I started in broadcasting, in fact, somebody called me. He said, "You're Mr. Smiley. Knock it off." I wanted to be liked. I wanted to be nice. I wanted to be myself. And I quickly learned, well, not quickly. It took me about 15 years. But 15 years into my career, my failed career, I learned that the best way to be is like, I don't give a damn. And screw you. Like, yeah, Howard Stern's probably a nice guy in person. Right.
Oh, yeah.
But he's kind of screw you in on the air because it's much more interesting. Yeah. Nobody wants ingratiating. Ingratiating's awful.
That's the funny thing about broadcast is that every time I did a tryout for a broadcast gig, you know, TV critic on the air, you got to get the smile in your voice.
Yeah.
right?
No, they were wrong because I used to do that. I can smile in my voice. You can tell even if you're listening that I'm smiling right now, can't you? Even if you're not looking, you know.
Yeah, and I want to slap you.
Yeah, and it's awful.
And Stacey wants to punch you.
It's awful. So you have
the smiling isn't it?
Did not.
Jeff, you just come off as angry.
Yeah, angry's not good either. What you really want to be?
You got a problem with that?
What you really want to be is insouciant. Like you like me, don't like me. I don't care. I am who I am. That's what you really want to be.
I'm too cool for school.
Yeah. But actually, angry is not
if
bad.
You use words like insouciant, you ain't getting on TV.
Well, that's actually true. That NBC's one-word review of me when I was supposed to be their chief correspondent on the site was, Leo, ich.
No.
Yeah. David Borman told me that. David Borman, who then later went on to become the Washington bureau chief at CNN and created the 3D virtual reporter,
right?
And a great guy, lives up here, but he was the VP in charge from NBC of the site, and he said, yeah, because I was supposed to be the chief correspondent. I was supposed to be like on the air every day, and he said, no, let me tell you what they said in New York. Thanks, David.
He
pulled no punches. That's all right. You know what? You're in broadcasting. You deserve it. Did you see the article? There are a number of them. Information had a good one. People are getting burned out from Zoom because they're on camera all the time. and we don't have that problem, do we?
You know, I felt really bad because I felt like this is kind of like a hate click article, right? Because the lead was this woman who wanted to get her lips filled because she was right. Like, oh, my lips look terrible on camera. Right. And I was like, oh, man, why did they do that? You know, because I can totally see women are constantly judged by their appearances,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And being on camera is hard. I mean, you will never see me without a full face of makeup on this show, ever.
This was the question. Is it outside pressure or is it internal pressure? Because, you know, a lot of people, when they first hear their voice on a recording, go, I sound like that. And I think probably same thing. People see themselves on camera and they go, oh, my God. And now they're forced to stare at themselves on camera hours and hours a day. Or is it that they feel like they're getting peer pressure to you should really look better?
Well, I think it's internal because there's an external need. I mean, as a woman, I'm like, I know I don't look professional unless I meet a certain standard, right? So you've got to look professional on these things.
It's true. It's true. Women on TV have always felt much more pressure. They can't wear the same dress 2 days in a row.
Oh, right.
There are even clothing rental companies designed for broadcasters. Becky Worley used to subscribe.
That.
Yeah, because you can't, if you're a weather girl or a news reporter or an anchor, you can't, guys, I wear the same, I rotate my jackets. I only have about 10 of them. I can't wear a different, but women can't. So there are literally rental things, mostly for weather reporters, because they're wearing dresses so that they never wear the same thing twice.
Yeah. And they have to their own salary, by the way.
Oh,
that
yeah.
Is not something
oh, yeah.
The
company
provides.
Doesn't pay. No. No.
So yeah, it's not awesome, unless you're like Katie Couric. I'm sure she's got some things in her contract.
yeah, no, some people do. In fact, when we first started on Tech TV, we had a wardrobe mistress, and they would take pictures of us. She went out and bought a lot of clothes for everybody. That went away really quickly. That and the makeup artists disappeared. You do your own makeup, wear your own wardrobe. So that was expensive.
Whoa, no makeup? Ooh.
Well, you had to put it on yourself. Yeah. Yeah, that's when we knew Tech TV was in trouble. When there were three things that happened. One was they got rid of the makeup artists. Two was they got rid of the wardrobe person. And three was they got rid of the free oatmeal in the snack room. That was really that was the final straw. When people couldn't have breakfast. Right, Karsten? You come in, no oatmeal. Come on, man. Next it's going to be coffee. So I've always made sure that we have lots of...
No, you can't take coffee away from the journalists.
No, can't take coffee away from anybody. Are you kidding?
Time Inc., we had free Pepperidge Farm cookies and wine and beer.
What?
They used to have a bar cart that drove around Fortune's office when the magazine closed.
Yes, they did.
On Fridays?
Right. Such a bad idea.
Yes. If you were a senior editor above, your credenza was stocked with liquor.
I actually had to send a memo saying no more drinking in the office because Anthony is a very talented mixologist. There is still in the cupboard over here all kinds of booze and mixers and stuff. And come, you know, well, it started, it was Friday at the end of the week, right? And then it slipped to Thursday. By the time, after a while, I was like, it's Wednesday, let's all get a drink. And everybody was drinking in the office, and I was really worried, not so much that productivity would go down, but that somebody would get in an accident going home, and I didn't want that to happen. So
we kind of... What was it? I think it was GitHub, if I remember correctly, had a whole stocked bar there. I thought, not good in an office.
I think it's
what
probably...
If, and what if you're recovering?
Yeah, exactly. I just didn't... I felt like, it's nice, everybody's convivial, I'm really happy, you know, you're having a good time, and you're happy, but let's not do that anymore. I don't want to be responsible.
The office Christmas party every week.
Yeah, Christmas party every week. That was pretty. That was pretty much it. But boy,
although we did
make
the
a
show.
Good drink.
Yeah, the drinks he made for the show that
remember
we
that?
Did
the
at Christmas
show. He made a different drink for every person on the panel.
So fancy
to match.
And
match their personality.
Poor man, he was not feeling.
Yeah, he was sick. God, can you imagine? In nowadays, somebody sick making you drinks. You would
jail him.
That's what I mean.
No, I'd be like, kills all things.
There's a PTSD psychic burden that we are imposing upon ourselves, and it's not gonna. I don't think it's gonna go away right away. It's like the people in the Great Depression who were penny pinchers to their very last dying breath. Right? It hits you in the brain.
Yeah, and I wrote the day I wrote about this, the day that the death toll passed 9/11, it brought it all back for me. And it was, and I realized it was the PTSD.
That's right. You suffer still from PTSD from 9/11. But that was one discrete event. This is going to habitually.
Oh, well, that's what I wrote then is this 9/11 in slow-mo.
Yeah, very, very slow-mo, isn't it?
Yes.
And now,
yes.
Of course, we far exceeded that death number.
Yes. And it's going to be much bigger than that because they're finally doing the calculation that I proposed to editors 3 weeks ago and nobody listened to me. And finally, the New York Times and the FT are doing it. They're looking at so-called excess mortality. The total deaths over the average is more likely to count.
Well, so many people
minus a few
dying at home
auto accidents we don't have.
Right.
But yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Not to mention all
the
divorces.
Well, that's a cheery beginning
to
the show.
Not to mention all the divorces and the children who will be born in 9 months.
One or the other, yeah.
So I was trying to find out on the Google story about Google helping you find unemployment data based on your state.
Yeah.
I can't find the Google update on that. I was wondering.
This is an Engadget story. Do you think they got it wrong or? Let me see.
Well, maybe Google pulled it. I'm looking for the actual.
Here is the Google link. You're right.
Oh no, it does. Okay,
it does.
If I search unemployment, I get help and information for Washington Employment Security.
Ah, and they know where you are. That's another thing. Are we going to become more complacent about privacy? We talked a couple of weeks ago about the Apple Google plan. Now, by the way, France is upset. Because they say, we have created a program, an application for your phone, but Apple will not let us use their Bluetooth information. Apple says, you can't use Bluetooth location information if it gets sent away outside of the phone. It violates privacy. And the French authorities say, who cares? We want it. And that's an interesting clash.
Well, so the government wants more data than Apple.
The government wants more data.
I always tell you, I always say government is not your friend in privacy. Government is the key enemy.
Right.
It is the primary industry. Here is, and I think Apple's right. So Microsoft, this week Microsoft put out privacy policies. I just dropped it under security in our rundown, Microsoft's security stance. We'll just call it that. And it's their preserving privacy while addressing COVID-19. And it's written by Julie Brill, who is now their chief privacy officer and used to be at the FTC. And this list is excellent. It's 7 points. It talks about obtaining consent, getting data only for public health, getting the minimal amount of data, and let users store and control their data so they get to choose whether it's on their device or in the cloud. And then You can't share it with people without consent or minimize what's shared, and then delete it when you no longer need it for the emergency, which I thought was actually a pretty, that's a bold step right there. So I actually thought these were excellent privacy protecting principles. And I wasn't surprised that Microsoft's doing this. Brad Smith has been very forward thinking about this. Julie Brill was on the FTC when the FTC started looking at privacy related to like IoT. So yeah,
Brad Smith is at the front of this. Yes.
So this was, I just thought this was good. I don't know if you found the link yet that I put in.
Well, now we have somewhere, it was in the rundown, a Republican senator is saying, Jobs and Pachai, it's all on you from Missouri.
That's an abdication of their job. It should be exactly. On everybody. Sorry. And I don't know. Yeah, this is, you know, I'm a little cynical when Microsoft publishes something like this. Because
oh, sure. They have an agenda. Like they actually pushed forward facial recognition laws. This Washington State is one of the first ones, and Microsoft basically wrote our facial recognition use law.
Going and is
forward.
It a good law?
There are good things about it, like all laws. It's a compromise. Right.
It's a common corporate jujitsu.
Right.
If you see a train coming down the track at you to cleverly write a law that protects your real interests while appearing to protect the public interest.
But that law does say that, governments need a warrant. There's a third party auditability on the facial recognition stuff.
And that's one thing that these guys do is they say, well, government really needs to prove they need it. Blah, blah. Meanwhile, but we're going to get it. It's okay if we get it. We'll take that information. It's like Google making a credit card saying or Apple saying the merchant's not going to get any personal information. Yeah, but you are.
Well, to be clear, Microsoft, with regards to COVID-19 data, is saying one should have it except for the public health companies
right.
that need it for that.
Right.
And that when they're done,
it should have
everything
a limited
should be dumped.
Time frame. That's the same as the Medium post we referred to a couple of weeks ago, where it was saying these are the mm-hmm. things that you have to do to protect people. And I agree with that. But also in a crisis, you can at the beginning of the crisis have the best intentions. But when it comes down to it and people are dying, it may be that we all go, yeah, okay, fine. But please, Microsoft, give France the information.
Yeah.
Apple, give France the information because we need to save lives at this point. It's being a little
fussy.
Also, Leo,
we asked about this. You asked about this last time. The how many people are going to use it? I can't find it now.
All of these things are voluntary, right?
Oxford did a study that if half use it,
it reduces the R-naught.
It makes a huge difference.
Yeah. So you don't need 100% compliance any more than your mask has to be 100% perfect. Your whole goal is to reduce the R-naught.
They were saying 60% compliance, but Singapore's track and trace. Let's see where their compliance is.
Yeah,
right,
but they're
now
an authoritarian government. So I
their track and trace compliance is like less than 20% last week when I looked. Yeah, so that's what
Singapore?
I said. So it was very, what is their app called? Singapore.
So they're not, even though they could at this point, they're not enforcing the use of this app. It's still voluntary.
I guess not. But why can't I find the name?
That's all right.
What's
we don't
it
need
called?
The name.
I can't
We got
Google.
The gist. What's the name going to do? I'm not downloading it. It's okay.
Oh, well, no, the name gets me the actual data point that I want. Because it was less than 20% last week, but this week it may be more, it may be less. The point is, I want to make sure we're factual. You know me. You know me and my journalistic self.
You know me. I couldn't care less. Facts schmacked. And this is why Stacey hates me.
I don't hate you.
No, I'm teasing. I know you don't. I loved, here's a perfect example. Benjamin Netanyahu, whose trial was supposed to begin yesterday for corruption. Oh, but the COVID. Let's close the courts down. No trial. The courts are closed down. You watch because this is going to be a wonderful cover for a lot of companies and a lot of governments.
A lot of corruption.
And a lot of corruption. Oh, but the COVID, it's going to be the new saying. Of course, there's some terrible stuff going on. Amazon has suspended 6,000 accounts worldwide for price gouging. I was looking at a blood oximeter because I, you know, that's one of the things they say is if you do get sick, watch your oxygen level because that's an early warning sign. And I thought it'd be handy.
Yeah, lots of people can't find those right now.
Yeah,
I have one.
And check the prices on them as they go up, 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 up. And
the I have an excellent one.
The one I bought from Viatom, the price.
Only 20% of the population has downloaded the tracing app from Singapore.
That's what you said.
Sorry. Jesus.
You're exactly
okay,
right.
Okay, I needed to know that that was accurate.
It was accurate.
Now y'all know.
She's perfect.
And that was as of April 12th. So that was a week ago.
Okay. It is surprising.
We're back to pulse.
But, you know, maybe that's what happens when you have an authoritarian government. If they don't compel you to do something, you're going to not do it. That's kind of the
bounce
back.
Well, it does erode public trust.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, I just noticed the oximeter I bought, the price has gone from $110 to $162 within a few days up and down. So
I got the Well-U.
They're nuts.
The Well-U, what is it? Well-U?
Well-U. I put it in the rundown chat.
And you like it?
O2 ring. Love it. Love it. It's very good.
The idea, and there was a good article in the New York Times yesterday by an emergency room physician. What he said.
Very good.
Yeah, wasn't that, I thought, what he
really well
what he
no, said that was terrifying. And now I have COVID and I don't know it. I mean, my God.
Well, what he said was, you know, we know that once your lungs just basically solidify that you can't breathe without moving your, you know, forcing them to breathe, that's when we're going to put you on a vent. But that, he said, is really way down the road. It turns out your lung function starts to fail very early on, but you don't notice it because you're still able to expel carbon dioxide, so you don't feel short of breath. But what's happening is the virus is damaging the surfactants in your lungs, so you're not getting oxygen. So an oximeter is a good early warning sign because if your blood oxygen goes, you know, normally it'd be in the 90s, it should be 97, 98. Yes. But if it goes down precipitously, even if you can breathe, you hie thee to the hospital because that's, he said, if we can get you then, we can treat you. And
the treatment is on forced oxygen, right?
Yeah. Well, they're starting to do that. They're doing cannulas instead of vents. Right. But yeah.
And they flip you over.
And they flip you over. There's all sorts of things that they can do. It's like a heart attack or anything else. The sooner you get there, the better.
But that's the crazy thing right now is that everybody's being told don't go in because they didn't have the capacity because they don't have the test. They don't know.
Right.
It got so bad in some cases that they were doing CT scans instead of because they didn't have any tests. The only way was to look at your lungs.
Right.
It's a horrendous abrogation of responsibility to humanity. What's going on? It's awful.
You know, the thing bothers me more, honestly, is all the failings of late stage capitalism in this country, the huge income inequality, and it really bothers me more that more poor people and people of color are dying. They're losing their jobs. They're forced to go to work in a dangerous situation.
Yep.
Because they can't afford to lose their job. All of these issues, you know, we upper middle class folk are surviving fine.
Right.
But it just breaks my heart.
Nicole Hannah-Jones, who is a brilliant journalist on the New York Times, an investigative journalist, Ida Bay Wells is her Twitter account. She said, stop calling the clerks in the stores heroes. They're not, they're victims.
It's insulting.
They're victims.
Yeah, and it just, again, breaks my heart. And I go to the store, and these people, they have to work because it's their job. It's the only thing they can do. And they're risking their lives because the protections are not very good.
So she said, to call them heroes is to justify their exploitation.
Right.
By praising blue-collar workers, public service, the progressive consumer is assuaged of her cognitive dissonance from The Atlantic.
Honestly, the poor grunts who had to go onto the front line and take the fire— they were heroes too, right? It's the people who have to, you know, face the onslaught, and they're usually the poorest, least advantaged among us, unfortunately. And that's kind of like life. It's not a good thing.
But that's what Stacey was saying earlier. I mean, those are the besides trying to build broadband and build infrastructure, we have to rebuild the structure of society.
That's the thing.
And
that's the cracks issue. Are showing.
Oh, this brings out every bit. Yeah. These inequities were all
there. The cracks have been showing. This is actually the utter, just the cracks just collapsed everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
U.S. judge blocks Twitter's bid to reveal government surveillance request. This goes back 6 years.
Twitter's been fighting for us, and we lost.
Yep. They wanted to do a transparency report that would include surveillance requests received from the U.S. government. A federal judge said that would harm national security. No, you don't. You can't do it. I can't knock that. That's the way it's supposed to work, right? I appreciate Twitter trying to fight
for it. I can knock it.
Well, but what if it does hurt national security?
Do I trust this government?
Yeah, I don't trust the government saying national security.
Well, it's not the government, though. It
took Edward Snowden to let us know what was going on.
It's the courts, though. Okay.
Yes, it's the courts, but the courts are stacked now, so I just don't know. My confidence in the system and in the courts has been purposely eroded.
And yet it is conceivable that it would damage national security to do this, right?
It could, but I'm not going to know now.
I think we can work our way around national security. I think we have solved those. It violates national security that we do not live in glass houses and don't have door locks, right? We have to make decisions about how far we want our privacy to extend and where we want the government. And I think the government, because of its power, the power to bring the state against a citizen, is so great. They really have to justify the ability to look into our lives to the extent that they can with election. So I think they're trying to make a case. I don't think the case they're been making is compelling. If judges believe it, then we'll lose that.
You're right. I mean, the theory is that you have a nonpartisan adjudication from somebody who's going to look at both sides and say, well, yeah, the government's made its case. This could potentially be damaging.
So what was the name of the judge? Let's look up the judge.
She was from the Northern California U.S. District Judge Yvonne Gonzalez Rogers, U.S. District Court for Northern California, which normally is a pretty liberal jurisdiction. But, I don't know this judge. Who is
Democrat?
She?
But, of course, Obama wasn't great with this either.
No, she's probably an Obama appointment, I would guess. But
where does it say?
So
Obama appointed her.
So. But, look, all we got is the system.
I know, but the system's being torn down.
Yeah.
So we just don't know.
I guess you also have to weigh it against the public need. Is what Twitter is reporting in this transparency report important public information?
Well, let's talk about that for a second, because what does Twitter actually know about you? The only thing they can really report to the government is your IP. Everything else is
I'll give you an example.
Identity. Look at what happened with the Saudi regime when they put agents inside Twitter to track who was behind certain accounts.
I'll give you an example from my own life. My daughter, this was several years ago. We've always had horrible troll problems. I don't know why. It's something I did, I guess. But my daughter, 10 years ago, maybe a long time ago, she was a teenager, she was a kid, got what was essentially a death threat. And I wrote to Ev because I knew him. And I said, Ev, can you help us? You got a kid. You got a daughter. You understand? No. So we were lucky. We found a Petaluma police detective who was willing to take on the case. He filed a subpoena. Mm-hmm. And using the IP information provided by Twitter, because they respond to a lawful subpoena, he was then able to get a colleague. He found the location. It was a Chicago ISP. He was able to get a colleague in the Chicago Police Department to subpoena the ISP and said, who was using this IP address at this time on Twitter? And they found it. It was a kid. The detective in Petaluma got the Chicago PD guy to go over to the kid's house, talk to his dad. That was the end of it. however, if it had been somebody who really did want to do the nasty things that this tweet said, the question that the police ask is, are you in fear of your life? And if you are, they can act on it. So that was a government request for information.
Mm-hmm.
I think completely legitimate. Now, I think that that probably would have appeared in a transparency report as one of, you know, we got 700 government requests this year and responded to this many of them. What does the public need to know that number? Is it important?
It's important for journalists who are trying to track what's happening, because they're not just, it's not just things like your police request. It's also things like, not FISA necessarily, but
there might be FISA requests. Uptick, and that probably, yeah, I mean, it would be my guess that it's the FISA requests that Twitter wanted to reveal, and the judge said, no, you can't, right? Because those those are national security interests. That's, we're trying to get a terrorist, and we think we can get him. And the FISA court can even say, and Twitter, you cannot say anything about this request. You, because revealing the request will alert the terrorists to the fact that we're onto them. So that's national security. And that is, the Patriot Act does allow that. And so it may well be, we don't know, that the judge said, yeah, I'm looking at some of these, and some of these are that kind of FISA request.
Right.
And it would harm national security to reveal the interest of the, you know, the FBI in this person. I think that that could be.
Way back when I ran local sites, the most common subpoenas we got were from police chiefs trying to find out the names of the unnamed police officers who were using our forums to complain about the chief.
Right. Obviously, that's not a good use of it.
That's not kosher.
And that happens. But that's the point is you can't paint it all with one brush. There's a variety.
Right, but that's
and
the,
I don't think the transparency
you're trying to deal with.
But does the transparency report give you the information you would need to say, oh, I see what's going on here?
Gee, there's a lot of requests coming from police in New Jersey.
Okay. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Okay.
You know.
You also, I mean, those transparency reports are designed to act as a canary in the for saying, hey, the government is, I mean, so basically to say you can't do that, it stops journalists, it stops national security
reporters from knowing. It does. The Patriot Act does allow.
Yeah, I know. I saw this episode of The Good Wife. Goodness.
It's called a national security letter. But I think the law already says that Twitter can't report that in their transparency report. By the way, NLSs do not require prior approval from a judge. So the Patriot Act gives law enforcement some sweeping. This is the analogy that you want to pay attention to during this time. Because of 9/11 and the terror in 9/11, we gave law enforcement sweeping powers that were never then retracted. And here we are almost 20 years later, they still have those powers.
Right, so sunsetting is an important design element.
Well, and the Patriot Act does sunset, but it keeps getting renewed.
Keeps getting renewed, yeah.
And that actually
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I think it's really important for these track and trace efforts for COVID-19, for governments, if they're trying to get people, if you're going to eliminate the opt-in, or if you're going to try to encourage people to share your data, I think having a very narrowly defined ask and then sunsetting that ask at either a time frame or when we achieve a certain policy goal, like, you know, 100 cases per day nationwide or something. So I think having those kind of, if we're going to do some sort of nationwide surveillance for track and trace, we need to have those kind of sunsetting, narrowly defined in rules that sunset.
Then there's Tubi. You know, Tubi is kind of an interesting over-the-top streaming service because it's free, but it's ad-supported. Fox recently bought them. They are now going to TransUnion, the credit bureau, to get information about viewers so they can do targeted advertising. By the way, this is so not illegal that they put out a press release saying they're doing it.
This is so Canoe Ventures was a venture backed effort by a couple cable companies to do exactly this way back in 2009 or 2010. And it failed because people were like, no. But yeah, this is the dream.
Tubi said the partnership will combine its understanding of content viewing behaviors with TransUnion's cross-verified consumer database. By creating a link from a device ID, it can draw insights around consumer preference. Quote, This is Matt Spiegel, Executive Vice President of Marketing Solutions and Media Vertical at TransUnion. Quote, The integration of TransUnion data assets can help companies connect the dots to gain a more comprehensive understanding of today's consumer and reach them with confidence, especially as they move and consume content in new ways. With identifiers such as third-party cookies on the decline, because we don't like them and we're blocking them, and media consumption changing, alternative identifiers such as home IP address are imperative for building a strong foundation of individual-level identity and reaching consumers on devices like connected TVs.
Yeah, well, your smart datas are oftentimes sending, they're not tying into TransUnion, but they are sending a lot more data than most people anticipate.
But that is the problem, is that any individual data, you could say, well, what do they have? The IP address. But any individual data, once it's combined with these other streams, and my God, the credit bureaus have so much information about every financial transaction. If you can cross-reference my IP address, figure out my name, and then tie in my credit data, you know everything.
Mm-hmm. And they'll use that to extrapolate out things.
But all they're going to do show ads. So Leo lives in an area where he's likely to get cancer. So we're going to send him some ads for some medicine. That kind of thing. I don't know. What's wrong with that?
It may be something as simple. I mean, when I buy my house, credit report's going to definitely know that I have applied for a mortgage.
Right.
So last week,
Leo was screaming that all targeting should be killed. This is a case point of his role as provocateur.
Maybe yes, maybe no. You don't know what my real opinion is.
I don't know the real Leo.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Tubi, says Lachlan Murdoch in a statement, will immediately expand our
That's all I need to know. But I guess Fox is Disney now, right?
No, this is Fox.
Oh, this is Fox? Oh, that's all I need
Fox,
to know.
Fox.
Yeah. It's evil. Throw
in fact, because Fox didn't have any of this stuff with the sale of its assets to Disney, they want to build up all this stuff. That's why they bought Tubi for $440 million. Tubi will immediately expand our direct-to-consumer audience and capabilities and provide our advertising partners with more opportunities to reach audiences at scale. Honestly, though, I kind of, as somebody who's trying to sell advertising, advertisers want to advertise to people who are going to buy. Otherwise, they're buying ads that are wasted. They may even be annoying to the people who see them. It's not an unreasonable thing for an advertiser to say, well, I just want to advertise to people who are interested in our product. And it's not it's not a harm to people. The problem is not that. The problem is if it's extended to other things like, oh, I'm going to also send this information to insurance companies to make sure that Leo doesn't get life insurance.
Or
so I got agreement
they're
today
going
to
get
go ahead.
Sorry, no, you go. I just want
There's
to hear
a little
you.
Delay ahead. in the Skype. Yeah. I apologize.
Yeah, my internet must be terrible today.
It is. It's not so good.
There is. Yeah. Or IBM and I think it was Visa or MasterCard was looking at consumption patterns and social media things you post on social media to establish credit scores. And, you know, so if you think about, like, what if everybody who's watching The Real Housewives doesn't pay their bills on time? Or what if
right.
enough people
you don't want to
watch it
those.
Don't?
Yeah.
Then you suddenly start getting these like weird red data line. Scientists who are like, "Woo, this is relevant."
Well, you're not even
Real Housewives know that redlining. Like, we will not lend money to people who watch Real Housewives. Sorry.
Right, and you're not going to. Nobody's going to sit at a desk and say, "Oh, that equals that." It's just the correlation is going to be there.
Right.
Well, I'll give you a privacy thing that bothered me today.
What?
So I just got approved for 100% paid CPAP for my sleep apnea because of 9/11.
Nice.
Well, the data goes right to Aetna.
Oh yeah. Well, they want to make sure, and this is the reason why. And it's hard to quibble with this. I'm really torn on this. Aetna is paying for this. They're putting out money, so they want to make sure you use it because the health benefits of a CPAP machine accrue if you use it a certain number of hours a week. Otherwise, they spend a lot of money on something that's just sitting in the corner, and they're still going to have to pay for your bad health outcomes. So this is one of those cases where I think if it is, I think if the data is narrowly, it's defined, you opt in and you know exactly what's happening, I kind of think it's okay. I don't think they should get the actual health data, but I do think saying Jeff has worn this is fair data for them to get.
Oh, but they're getting the actual health data.
Well, I know. And that's so I want to make clear exactly where, and that's the hard thing about talking about data sharing is we have to be very clear on what data we're actually sharing.
They require it to be worn 4 hours a night, which alone tells me that nobody can tolerate the damn thing. But we'll see.
Oh, no, people hate them.
Well, thanks.
You've not worn it yet?
No, I've gotten it yet. Well, normally they would send someone to my house, a technician.
Yeah.
About ripping off the insurance companies. Usually the doctor gets the health data and the insurance firm gets the usage data.
Really? Okay.
I mean, you should definitely double check.
It makes sense, usually, though, because if somebody's been prescribed a CPAP machine and isn't wearing it, the likelihood of death and illness is higher. And that's what insurance companies are trying to figure out.
Why don't they have a pill dispenser that makes sure? I mean, well, this would be good too. You know, the old people should have a pill dispenser that takes pills, right?
They want that, Jeff. They do. The problem, I can tell you why, but it's boring.
Generally, what's going to happen is these will be voluntary. It's voluntary, Jeff. You don't have to take the money. These are voluntary.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Yes. If you want to pay the whole thing yourself, fine.
Fine.
You get it without the data.
It's voluntary. And so that's how they get around it. Nobody's making you take your pills. Nobody's making you wear a CPAP. But if you want us to pay for it, you better give us the information that you're wearing it. And I don't think that's unreasonable. The problem is that, you know, what you create is a class structure for privacy. If you really want privacy, you have to be able to afford it.
Yep.
And if you can, and if you have to use the insurance to pay for the CPAP machine, well, you don't get any privacy.
Right.
Which is interesting.
Well, heck, and just affording and having insurance is kind of a class thing nowadays.
Yeah, privacy.
Oh, amen.
A lot of things are a luxury. Privacy is one of them now. Get ready because the Health and Human Services has built a tool called HHS Protect Now. It's already up and running as of April 10th. It helps officials compile reports on coronavirus spread by collecting data from state and local government, healthcare institutions, and colleges. We don't know what the data is, but we do know where it's coming from. Palantir.
Speaking of people you don't trust.
Palantir is Peter Thiel's shady company that has been doing this kind of thing for business for a long time, collecting data from a variety of sources, compiling it. I don't think they have their own data collection stuff, right? They just compile it from other sources. I don't know. Nobody really knows, actually.
But I think this is a case where if the government gets its hands on the app data, what does Palantir do with it?
Palantir, according to The Verge, has at least two active contracts with Health and Human Services. One they signed in January, one less than 2 weeks ago. According to the Daily Beast, based on sources with knowledge of the project and confirmation from HHS itself, the HHS Protect Now platform, which is set to be unveiled later this week, pulls data from across the federal government, state and local governments, healthcare facilities and colleges to help administration officials determine how to mitigate and prevent spread of the coronavirus. Well, that seems fine. 187 data sets integrated into the platform, hospital capacity and inventories, supply chain data, diagnostic and geographic testing data, demographic statistics, state policy. This is what Palantir does, takes all these disparate data sources, combines them to give you actionable information.
And let's kill some black people and
That's where you would
people.
Find that information, though, is that's one of the pieces of information you could find out. Is
right, good, so this should all be, all that information should be public.
Good Lord.
In a way this, that could, others could be using it.
Yeah. HHS is relying on private sector partner contributions of data. But for a good thing, right?
One would hope, but if it's not, it's an open source question. So I wrote a piece this week about medicine's open information ecosystem and how we have things to learn from that. And I'll go to that in a second. But one thing the EU is putting out is a data portal where a lot of data, tremendous amounts of data, are going to be available to all researchers. Now, if that's the case, I know what the data is and I can see where it's being used, then I'll have more faith in it. But if it's being done and decisions are being made with it in the black box of government, that's what everybody complains about with algorithms. But now it's our lives at stake. Death panel.
Or pre-crime. A couple of years ago, Palantir was working with the city of New Orleans to do predictive policing. Even city council members didn't know about it. The city had a contract, which they recently terminated after 6 years, with Palantir to figure out where crimes were going to be committed. Wow. Predictive policing. They, so this is the kind of stuff
I really don't trust Tom Cruise.
This is the kind of stuff Palantir does. Yeah, if you know, if Minority Report style pre-crime policing happens, it's going to happen from companies like this. I'm not surprised. So you want an open? So you actually wrote a good piece in Medium. You want a open?
Well, so what I'm arguing is that it already is open. What was fascinating? So I interviewed for I have my Twitter list right there, bit.ly/COVID Twitter list. And I interviewed 4 scientists so far who are amazing, which you can find on Buzz Machine. And as I was listening to them and talking to them about how they operate in 2 ways. One is the preprint servers. That is to say, papers that have not been,
Go to Buzz Machine. I haven't paid my Medium backsheesh.
It's on Buzz Machine. It's there. You can go to there.
I'm starting to really hate Medium.
I know. So they have preprint servers where papers are put up that have not been peer-reviewed yet and have not been published. And yes, there are problems. Can be problems with that. But it's really amazing to see there have been 4,000 COVID papers so far. Some of them crap, but a hell of a lot of them very useful. And I looked at – there's a paper that was done that's very controversial right now in Santa Clara County, California, that looked and argued about the – amount, it was a serology, a blood study to find out how much was, how prevalent is the virus. There's much controversy about it. Well, the same day, 5 phenomenal epidemiologists and virologists came in and in great detail on Twitter criticized the report point by point and its conclusions.
The report itself hadn't been peer reviewed, but in a way, this is
not been peer reviewed.
This is peer reviewed right now.
Yeah. Peer review at the
in
speed
public.
Of the internet.
Yeah.
So I thought about this and I thought, well, yeah, that's the what we're all in is an open information ecosystem, right? So I started off saying that we in journalism and media are no longer the deliverers of information. The information is already delivered. It's already there. So what do we have to figure out is how do we add value to that? And what the doctors are doing that's so fascinating to me is they're adapting. Right. One of the doctors I talked to, Angela Rasmussen from Columbia, said that when she had her last epidemic, she didn't have preprints. It took a year to get a paper out and get learnings.
Right.
Thank God we have this now. Now, meanwhile, we've had bad papers. We had the paper about hydroxychloroquine that went out into Twitter and then into Trump's brain and out his mouth. And some people have died as a result, it would appear. But we've also had cases where but in that case, the doctors were on Twitter saying, no, bad paper. Stop. Don't judge this. Right. So medical Twitter, social media with the preprint world is resulting in a phenomenal ecosystem here of information getting out and getting judged. So you need some things in that, right? They needed a way to find – they had to make things open, number one. Number two, they had to find ways to find the information and organize it. Number three, they needed a way to criticize it. Number four, you needed a way to figure out who's really criticizing and are they any good or not. Because I've had doctors come to me and say, that person, that guy, he doesn't belong on your list, and here's why.
But you see why peer review has always happened offline in the past. There is a risk, if everything gets published, that people will not be able to weigh, you know, yeah, sure, okay, great. It got peer reviewed, in effect, in public on Twitter. But that doesn't mean that people didn't read the initial report and believe it. And the New York Times published it. They're not seeing the Twitter takedown of it later. So there is a risk doing this all in public, right?
The New York Times today had a piece that I spent 2 hours this morning doing a tweet storm, believe it or not.
Or as Karsten called it, a tweet typhoon.
That was me. That was me.
Oh, that was you. Me. Okay. I just think I feel like there should be somewhere better than Twitter for all of this to happen.
But no, that's the you see that snotty. That's the point. The doctors are using it. They're using it brilliantly. They're finding each other. And in the case of this paper, right, the New York Times, you know, the vaunted New York Times, did a horrible story about that Santa Clara paper saying, well, this guy did it, and it could mean that some people don't like some of what he did, blah, blah, blah.
That's right? Just poor science
and
writing, right?
It's bad.
Yeah.
You should never do a preprint. So there's rules. You shouldn't do preprint reporting until you go to at least two or three scientists credentials who give you a different view, and you include that in. Now, in the case of this paper, this guy's stuff is being used by the people who are out there demonstrating like zombies saying, stop this.
Right.
It's not necessarily his fault, but they're using it to say, see, this isn't so bad. And so they didn't even Google them. Right. So the Times didn't do its job. The job should have been, here is how epidemiology is being politicized. Here's what you need to know about it, and so on and so forth. So I was ready to go and look and say, well, I wonder what San Jose is happening, because San Jose took sports reporters and put them on the COVID beat.
Right.
Well, I was wrong. Great report.
Oh,
excellent.
That's great.
Excellent.
Well, you know, the standard among news. Sports reporters is a lot higher.
Well, this is a science report. Oh, just okay. To be clear, it's a science report.
Okay.
But my point is that we're all in this open information ecosystem, right? We got to it's just there. You can't do anything about it. You got to deal with preprints. You got to deal with social media.
Right.
How do you use it well? And medicine is teaching us how to use it well.
So the responsibility of journals of record like the New York Times is to do their work before they publish. So
yes.
Preprints are published without any screening, but before they republish the information in a preprint, they need to do their job.
Exactly.
And maybe, things are going to slip through, aren't they? I mean, that's what...
Let me just throw this out as a working journalist who has worked recently in what is a very high-pressure environment.
Yeah.
You don't always have time. You're usually working against a... this should have been up an hour ago deadline kind of thing, because it just came out an hour ago and somebody else has already issued a broken
Mistakes
news
will
or breaking
happen.
News. And what happens is you will try to be calling your sources, but you know they're also busy. So I get it. These things should not be happening, but this is part of the challenge of doing news in right. real time. And so
Stacey, but when we come on this show and there's been a story that's happened and I've seen something out there and it involves one of your areas of expertise, I wait to hear what you say about it, because you have expertise and I trust you about that. And that is your brand and you're not going to ruin that. And that has value.
What if experts don't agree?
Well,
They don't.
Journalism world is firing people like me left and right because we're expensive. They bring in...
I know that.
They bring in so many young people and I've trained a lot of young journalists, you know, and I'm like, oh, you are just not smart. But it's not that
that's why I'm doing this stuff, is to try to train them too, is to say this is what's out there.
Right.
But they can't. Journalists on GA beats where they're literally rewriting press releases. And then happens.
But even in this case, Stacey, maybe this is to your point, even the New York Times screwed it up badly. Right. And point here was, it wasn't hard to go on. There were five epidemiologists with long Twitter, well-known people that any science reporter would know, Mark Lipsitch, others. And it was easy to find them on Twitter. And there they were within hours, had given a peer review. And the New York Times ignored them.
So should we not read the New York Times, instead read Twitter?
Well, in some things, yes.
Oh, God.
This was really bad editing.
I'm very depressed.
Because I wasn't reading Twitter. Twitter's
not
edited
at all. It's unedited.
Twitter's not a media brand. I was reading five great epidemiologists on Twitter.
You chose who to read, yeah.
Twitter is not a thing. When the media says, Twitter says, that is the greatest lie of all. Twitter doesn't say a thing.
Right. Right.
Right? That's an old mass media way to look at the world.
It behooves one to remember the immortal words of Steak'em. Friendly reminder, in times of uncertainty and misinformation, anecdotes are not data. Good data is carefully measured and collected information based on a range of subject-dependent factors, including but not limited to controlled variables, meta-analysis, and randomization. Let's not forget. Steak'em didn't forget. You shouldn't forget.
Oh, my goodness.
I in my Twitter storm today, I said, listen, I'm not a science reporter. I'm a guy who retweets Steak'em's admiringly.
Yeah.
And Rate My Room on Skype.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Jeff, you've been leading me to the zeitgeist lately. I'm really.
That's what this show is. Oh, my God.
That's what we're supposed
this
to be.
This Week in Zeitgeist. What? We named it wrong.
Oh, Twiz.
It's Twiz.
I want that t-shirt.
We're rebranding the whole damn thing.
Well, can we get a new theme song with it, please?
Quiz, yes, I'll be honest.
And we'll get a new theme song. It's not going to be this week in Mundschutz. It'll be this week in Zeitgeist.
So, by the way, I didn't know that Jason writes music.
Oh, yeah.
So I said, can you please write us a damn theme song?
Well, will he? We should get a better theme song, I admit it.
We should.
I like recorders as much as the next guy. Yeah, we don't hear it.
See, the poor audience hears it. We don't hear it.
What if we have DeepMind, because they do have a composing thing? We'll just have DeepMind compose something for us. There's nothing more appropriate.
I'd be insulted.
It will be weird.
It will be weird. That's true. Let's take a little break for our one and only fine advertiser, and then we shall...
God bless you. As Steak'em says... Bless.
Steak'em bless. Our show today brought to you by This Week in Google, brought to you by ZipRecruiter. By the way, I should, as parenthetically, mention that many of our employees are also brought to you by ZipRecruiter. We use them and love them. But here's a message they sent. Right now, we cannot be overwhelmed. We have to work to keep our loved ones safe and protect our communities. We have to work to stay strong, to stay connected, to stay focused. We have to work to inspire, to innovate, to build new solutions. But for all of this to work, we have to work together. At ZipRecruiter, we connect employers and people every day. But today is different. We're partnering with first responders, government officials, the medical community, the innovators, and the manufacturing, transportation, and food distribution industries. We want to make sure we're finding the right people for the right jobs right now. Let's work together. And the website is ZipRecruiter.com/work together. I kind of admire this. I really need some nice piano music behind it, some dramatic piano music, but you get the idea. ZipRecruiter.com/work together, especially if you're looking for people in these vital industries right now. ZipRecruiter's great. ZipRecruiter.com/work together.
And thank you, ZipRecruiter.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for not running away from the topic as a sponsor, from being around and recognizing we're all in this together.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a challenge because, of course, you don't want to be a downer in an ad. I'm seeing on TV a lot of, and that's why I said the piano music, they all have the same. Somebody's writing piano music, making a lot of money with a dramatic...
Jason. Wiley Jason.
Maybe that's what we need, some dramatic piano music, right? But you see a lot of those ads. My favorite is the Uber ad. Have you seen the Uber ad?
No.
Oh, my God.
I don't watch TV.
I wonder if I can play it without...
I'm not a snob. I just don't like to watch
TV. Let me ask...
That was a delayed reaction.
Let me ask Karsten... Can I play the Uber ad? Here, this is from Ad Age. This is the Uber ad. I'll play it a little bit, but I'll play it like in a little window. There's the piano music. Very important. Kind of the minor key. People looking out a window, waving. They're all sheltering at home. They're sad. They're eating on their roof. They've got a dog, but nothing much else. Look, she's handling the box with tongs. They're zooming each other. Oh, they've turned their house into a playground for the children. Playing frisbee, washing foods, dancing. This is the Uber ad. There's no cars in the Uber ad. There's just a lot of people at home, actually. Somebody painting a heart on their window. A dog licking yoga. People, which dogs do, eating the toilet paper. There she is giving her husband a shave. That's not going to happen, Lisa. They're hugging. She's pregnant. She's looking out the window. A lot of people looking out the window now. Now there's a little baby looking out the window. There's an old man looking out the window. And then stay home for everyone who can't. thank you for not riding with Uber. It's
the nicest thing Uber has done.
It's a wild ad. Thank you for not riding with Uber.
Did you see? I put in the rundown chat. The Dove's courage is beautiful.
Dove's always been good on that kind of thing.
Dove's
right?
been good on this. So Dove, this is the poor healthcare workers who have to wear these masks and wear all this stuff, and their faces just get mangled by it.
So they need to use said, Dove beauty products.
No. Don't be cynical.
No, I'm not cynical.
You should be cynical when it comes to Dove.
Well, that's what Steakums will tell you. Steakums says, always remember, I'm a brand. I'm trying to sell you frozen meat product.
but there's good brands.
But there's good
brands. All of our sponsors, for instance, are good brands.
They are indeed.
I love you. I know you wrote this, Jeff. Snooty Times Journos yes. ask, is Twitter good? And it's a panel discussion among really mostly cooking and style columnists at the New York Times. About is Twitter good again? Kind of, yeah. I don't want to spook it by writing about this. I think part of it is just the absence of feeling of dread that you should be doing something better with your life. You know, every time I read Twitter, and I got to just follow different people, I guess, I get depressed.
Yeah.
It's depressing for me.
You don't follow enough corgi columns. Or
I don't know if that's going to help.
You know, Twitter is like, wonderful for pictures of dogs and adorable things and
but then
yes,
the bad stuff sneaks in too.
You just well, I mean that's the way the world is.
Yeah, but I don't need to I don't need to go
it's
there.
It's like when you're meditating, you choose what to focus on. You're like, I see this and I'm letting that go. I see this, I will embrace it.
So okay, let's just do a little sample of my Twitter feed. Elon Musk tweets, there are now 420 operational Starlink satellites.
Okay, so let's help you here. Unfollow Elon Musk. Let's start. We're going to clean up your Twitter.
I just want to point this out. I just want to point this out. That sounds
but
like
do a, follow bored Elon Musk.
Yeah, I do. I do actually follow. So this sounds like just oh, that's cool. They've got 420, and then you realize 420 is code for marijuana smoking, and so he's doing a marijuana joke. Okay, you're right. Unfollow. Okay. All right. You're right. All right.
Now, see, we're gonna fix this up.
Help
now,
me.
Now, wait. But while you do that, you're going to replace it with a corgi. You got to replace
every
it with a corgi.
Every time a Twitter feed dies, a corgi gets its wings. Okay.
Yes.
So I'm just going to search for corgis. I'm not a fan of corgis, but all right. Here's this guy, my corgi named Duke from Eduardo Aroles.
That is not a corgi, but it is adorable.
It isn't a corgi, is it? So this is there's
no.
even corgi Twitter is full of liars. That's not a corgi
care.
Either.
Oh my goodness.
A corgi smeared with jam and passed out on the floor after eating too much jam. Okay. Here's
See?
Now these are corgis. This is a group of corgis is called a corganization. Okay, I'm not following corgi stuff.
See, do you feel better now?
No.
Do you feel just a little bit better?
No, that's horrible.
Okay, well then, what?
Here's another one that I like. VCs congratulating themselves. Quoting my hero, Paul Graham. That's, by the way, a good feat. And this is Paul Graham. With NYC, we effectively reinvented last names. So many founders share the same first names that we started saying, for example, Steve from Reddit, which is exactly what Steve de Reddit means in French, or Steve von Reddit in German. Okay, Paul Graham's usually a little more profound than that. Okay, there's Father Robert.
No, he thinks he is.
He's got MFing snakes in his MFing broadband box. Yeesh. That's kind of,
oh, yeah, they love that there because they're warm squirrels like
yeah.
it, too.
Yeah. That's going to slow it down. Oh, Peter Frampton, 70 years old. Peter apparently doesn't know how to use Twitter, so his quote is cut off, but I'll click it so we get the whole thing. 70. He's 70. Peter Frampton comes alive. Okay, fine. How things work. This is how machine learning checks if you're social distancing properly. See, this is good. This is probably somebody from you.
Do you follow Quanta Magazine?
This is what I said
follow
earlier,
that.
Yeah.
I like Quanta Magazine. Yeah, that's good. See, these people, not so, they're red. Oh, look at all the red boxes. These people are bad, bad. So what do we do?
Yeah,
do
but
we
they get may RoboCop? Live in the same house.
Right. See, I walk next to my wife because, you know, I've already got her germs.
Right.
I don't know. And then there's Trump, which I don't want to see. Okay. Joel, a friend, I know art when I see it. It's a helicopter chase on this freeway, the 405. Okay. There's my friend Ant, so that's okay.
There's Ant's good. Steakum's good.
Something from Steakum.
Chris Hayes is good.
Yeah, Chris Hayes, he's one of those MSNBC guys. Jim Acosta from CNN, right? He's a White House correspondent for, is it CNN? Can we ask Fauci what he thinks of possible second wave during flu season? Why is he asking this on Twitter? Jim, you're in the briefing. Why are you asking this on Twitter? Why? Why? And then
So what was happening was Redfield, the head of the CDC, I think, as we've been on, I don't have the sound on, but I'm guessing he had to walk the plank as Fauci did before.
Oh, poor Fauci.
Because Redfield said the second wave is going to be worse, and Trump was enraged.
Trump is enraged should be the Twitter motto.
Mm-hmm.
All right. See, I already
don't follow Trump.
Well, I don't follow him, but you can't avoid him.
I refuse to.
But I don't follow him, but you can't avoid him.
Jeff, you retweet him sometimes.
I refuse to follow him. I will get angry and scream at him. But that's what somebody has reported.
People like you get Trump in my feed. I don't like Twitter.
Well, Ant did a filter. So you can
I should only follow Ant. That's what I should do. That's the filter. This is scary, but it's okay. I'm going to consider the source, which is a very progressive, left-leaning publication called In These Times. The head of the Postal Workers Union says the Postal Service could be dead in 3 months. No, this is April 16th, 2020. The Postal Service can't.
Oh, no, but.
What?
Sorry, June? The story is that they were talking about it when Trump took it as part of
the CARES Act. There's going to be money for the Postal Service?
No, there's not. He denied it. And so they were like, well, then the Postal Service will shut down by June.
I see.
So the story itself is not new. Okay. Sorry.
So I shouldn't worry about
it.
The Postal Service is going to be just fine, right?
A lot of people did buy stamps.
which is just so mean.
If the Postal Service is gone, that stamp is worthless. I just want to point out, FedEx and UPS are not going to honor your Postal Service stamp.
We will still have.
I think we constitutionally, don't we have to? Isn't it in the U.S. Constitution of the United States of America that there shall be?
Well, what does that mean anymore?
Well, all right.
We're supposed to have three arms of government, too.
Zoom, okay.
You say I'm angry, Stacey.
Yes, I know. See,
yes,
this is why
I'm angry.
I don't listen to this show because it's like more Twitter.
Well, let's leave Twitter and let's go back to talking about. Do we have a change log?
You know what, Jeff? Do you have the drummers and those horn guys? Bring them in. Let's do the thing.
But are they how do you play a trumpet with a mask on? That's a hard thing.
It's not well played. Listen, you can tell. Actually, that's quite well done. Google has added a feature. I don't know. Do you want this? It's rolling out slowly. You're going to change the sensitivity of the Hey Google.
Oh, I 100% do.
Is your Google responding too quickly?
No, it's not responding fast enough.
Want to turn up the sensitivity?
Yeah, because I walk downstairs and there's one. I don't know what it is about the acoustics or I don't know. But I'm always constantly, I'm right next to it. I'm like, hey, G, what's the weather? Because it's right by my front door before I walk the dog. So I'm like, coat, no coat. And I always have to shout it.
So this is not available to everybody. When it is available, it will be on the app in the privacy section. It's got a new settings page. You got a little slider. You got in the middle, you got default. In the left, you got least sensitive. On the right, you got most sensitive, and that's per speaker. So I could see that you would want this maybe if you've got a speaker in the living room that's always waking up with the TV show, you would make it less sensitive. And then for you, when you walk the dog, the one nearest there, you'd make it more sensitive. Does that mean? I don't know what more sensitive means, though. Like it's listening harder?
I assume it will be less discriminatory. It might generate more false positives. I'll see if I can turn it on and tell you.
That's a good question. That's a good answer. Google Fi is getting eSIM support. That means you can use it on your new iPhone. It's. Ooh. I don't think it'll still do the Google. The secret sauce of Fi is that it goes between T-Mobile, Sprint, U.S. Cellular, or Wi-Fi, depending on what works better. I don't know if you have to have special hardware to do that or not, but at least you don't need a SIM. You can set it up by going online, which is nice. And that's a feature of the new iPhone, or all the iPhones, is they have eSIMs, no physical SIM. And Google Fi is a very good choice for data, actually, I think. I have mm-hmm. it on my iPad. But I put a SIM in, but I guess I don't have to anymore. So that's nice.
In for example, India, they have mostly phones with two SIMs. Does the iPhone in India have two SIMs? Or?
Yes, I think they have a dual SIM iPhone for India.
Dual SIM. Yeah. Yep.
You kind of have to in India because the areas covered by carriers. First of all, there are many, many carriers, and the areas covered are small. So it's not unusual at all that you would have different carriers depending on where you are in your neighborhood.
But Facebook, we'll get back to it, I guess, in a second. Facebook spent a fortune investing in India.
Oh, yes,
Indian
that's our next story after we finish
okay,
the change.
Okay, fine. Yes, sorry. Well, get ahead, Jeff.
There is an old adage that no computer program is ever really done until it can fetch email. Google Meet is adding Gmail integration.
Not going to help.
Just what you needed. Grid layout and improved low lighting quality and more. Meet, of course, is the app that is getting a lot of usage. We do a lot of Google meetings now.
It's been crap for me.
It's not good, as good as Zoom, I think. And by the way,
Zoom
has been
much better.
I should mention Zoom has really gone the extra mile to improve security. They just released version 5.0. As we mentioned last week, Alex Stamos, well-known head of security at Yahoo and Facebook. Don't blame him for all the bad stuff that happened, he says. But he came in as a consultant. They hired a former Microsoft security person who's really good. Is it Katie Masuris? She's very, very, very good. They've rewritten. They're really working on improving their security. So I feel like Zoom, because it is the easiest to use and because everybody you know wants to use Zoom, it was really important. It's an opportunity for Zoom. And the good news is they took it seriously and they seem to have done that.
I had a 2.5-hour call today with somebody in Vienna. And her sound kept going off. I couldn't figure out what it was. Her video was fine. I don't know if it was Zoom or if it was her machine, but it was very weird.
YouTube Music, which has replaced in many cases Google Music, and if it hasn't yet, it will for you, has added a new tab. Explore. I have subscribed. In fact, I'll do it right now. I've subscribed to Google Music forever, and all of the features, I guess, are slowly migrating over. Let me see. Oh, I don't have the new tab yet. I don't have an Explore tab. But maybe someday soon I will. Music discovery is actually a fairly important thing. One of the things, Spotify keeps winning, not because they have more songs. Everybody's got the same libraries, roughly. Not because maybe of the user interface, but because of their playlist capability, which people love. And I think because of the Discover Weekly playlist that they make every week for you, so you can discover new music. I think that's a really important part of any music service. And Google's probably looking over their shoulder at Spotify saying, how can we be more like them? This will replace the now defunct.
Well, in Spotify.
Go ahead.
I was going to say they were first with lots of integrations. Like, remember how you used to only be able to get Google Music in like googly places?
Right.
So I think that's another advantage as an independent purveyor of streaming music and having the widest catalog for a while. I think that's kind of, that helped it.
And I'm going to run down a rat hole real quickly here, but then I'll get back to the change log. But Sonos, which was the king of all this, has announced they're going to do a radio station. Sonos Radio, it's a free streaming music service. It has a lot of radio stations. They're going to combine not all, but many of the radio stations on iHeart and CBS and radio.com. They'll also have their own Beats One style station. Apple has a station on their music thing that will play music. Again, this is, I think, is about discovery.
You poor Sonos people.
I know.
Still trying to find some value in that overpriced speaker.
Customers can listen worldwide, Jeff, via the Sonos app on their Sonos devices and will be located
in the
global radio stations available for our customers. Sonos' original programming will be available in the U.S., Canada, U.K., Ireland, and Australia starting yesterday. So I'll have to try it. It's available now. There'll also be ad-free artist stations, kind of Pandora style. The first station will be centered around, Radiohead frontman Tom York. Is that okay, Jeff? He's okay, right?
I think that would appeal to a lot of the Sonos buyers out there.
Yeah, probably. Radiohead, we love it. Brittany Howard of Alabama Shakes, I like them. David Byrne, love him. And Third Man Records are going to be new artist stations launching regularly. So that's just a side. It's not a Google, but it's a sideline related to the new Explore tab in YouTube Music. And finally, the Google Play Store is pushing health and fitness apps. And Android TV gets a Stay Mindful and Fit row. I don't know anybody uses Android TV. I do. I have a Shield. So there's a new row. The whole thing is organized around rows. It'll be a Get Mindful and Fit row. You know, there is actually a good reason to do that. See, look at that. You got your Peloton. You got your Dance Fitness with Jessica. These are all, I think, mostly paid. But anyway, there it is. Your home. Your Stay Mindful and Fit row. It is the case, I believe, that your prognosis if you get COVID, and aren't we all going to get it eventually, is better if you are fit. And you do a lot of aerobic exercise so your lungs are strong.
Excellent.
So do it. And that...
Get out there.
That... Get the drums. Drummers, stop smoking. It's time. Get off your break. That's the Google changelog. What a kettle drum. Now we can talk about the big acquisition from Facebook.
Well, not even an acquisition.
Or it's a minority stake.
Because they only have 10% of it.
10% for a lot of money.
But for $5.7 billion.
Wow. What is this thing that they bought? It's a phone company.
They bought 10% of a phone company.
Which is an affiliate of the largest company in India. And the thinking is that they acquired, is it Jio? Is that how you pronounce it? They acquired Jio because they want to beef up. Well,
they didn't acquire. They got 10%.
I'm sorry. Invested in Jio because of online payments. And right now they are.
Yes, they're building WeChat is what they're doing for India.
That's right. And they are not a big player yet. They're not a big player yet. So
nope.
they got to do some acquisition. I'm sorry. Investments.
They just say they bought them as if you want to. Acquisition acquired a minority stake.
They acquired a minority stake. 10% is not that much.
Okay, fine. Just
but it was a lot of money. It's a freaking lot of money.
It's the biggest cash haul that Facebook. How much did they get Instagram for? $1
billion? Instagram was $1 billion. No, the biggest one was WhatsApp. They spent $22
billion.
Depending on the stock price, a lot of money on WhatsApp. This is only a mere $5.7
billion.
And to be fair, WhatsApp was their chance to be like WeChat. So,
Well, but
that's a good point, Stacey. Yep.
Maybe they're kind of making these. First of all, they got the money, right? $5 billion, big deal. And they need to get these partnerships going so that they can make WhatsApp, which is already popular in India, but they want to make it the full featured payment thing. And there's other companies already in the.
So
field.
I saw speculation today that Lyft price is down so far that Google has to buy it. Tomorrow, of course, it's just speculation.
I saw that too.
But is it a point? I mean, there must be some real bottom feeding opportunities now.
Oh yeah.
There's tons. I mean, this is the time when lots of people in the IoT world, we're seeing lots of companies that do drone based or remote, not monitoring, but going to view things like analysis and checking into stuff. That is off the charts high because a lot of firms are looking to buy assets. And so they're trying to get a sense of, you know, the quality of those assets because it's time to come in and, you know.
I am being chided. Chided, I say, by the chat room. No, by the chat room for having missed so many important changelog items. I'll do them real quickly. Fortnite is now on the Play Store. Remember, for a while, Epic Games said, we're going to sideload this. they've given up. They're going to give Google their 30% because it's so important to be on the Play Store. YouTube has debuted a new slate of With Me originals during the coronavirus pandemic. I don't know what With Me is. It's the hashtag With Me campaign. For instance, the creator games presented by Mr. Beast will be a live event with a popular YouTuber. I never heard of him, but okay. Mr. Beast challenges others on the platform to compete in games from their respective homes. Another example, Stay Home with Young Blood, a weekly series that follows a singer-songwriter in a rental apartment where he's quarantined with four friends. Oh, God. Celebrity Substitute is a distance learning show which brings in celebrities like Carly Kloss and Ken Jeong to teach lessons about subjects such as coding and biology. I wonder which of the two Carly Kloss is teaching. There's a lot of these things. We're doing a thing on Friday, I should mention, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern time. We're going to do this, use this new Netflix plugin for Chrome that lets you watch along. And our hosts and a variety of invited hosts will be all, we're all going to be watching The Tiger King together.
Oh, God.
No, we can't. Oh, God. We can't play The Tiger King for you. You have to have Netflix. But if you put this plugin, this Chrome plugin on, it will allow you to sync up with our view of Netflix. You'll see us watching, and you can watch along, and we'll all react together. Some of our hosts have never seen Tiger King.
I've never seen it, but I can't watch it.
Do you want to? You want to join us?
Nope. Nope.
Come on.
I can't handle those. I used to live in a place like this, and cruelty to animals.
Were you in a cult? Were you a member of a cult?
I was never in a cult.
Okay.
No. I did live in Texas. Does that count?
Yes. Go to NetflixParty.com, download the Netflix Party plugin so you will be ready to watch Tiger King with us. You don't actually have to watch it. You could just listen to us going, oh, my God.
Mystery Tiger Theater 2020.
Yeah, with all of the Twit hosts.
So what do you see? Do you see the Twit hosts?
Yeah, but you don't see Tiger, because we can't play Tiger King.
Right, you can't play Tiger King, but you see a screen
watching it, and you can play it. That plug-in lets you play it in sync. The whole idea is people get together, families get together, watch a movie together, kind of like Zooming at the same time, but this extension does it for you. Google Store has refreshed product categories with Pixel, Nest, Stadia, and Pixelbook brands. This is the rump Google changelog provided by Scooter X in the chat room.
At the end, we're going to have Jeff just do a little finger drumming.
Yeah. Phones are now Pixel. Connected Home is now Nest. Gaming is now... So they put brands on all the categories. You see the difference? Laptops and tablets are now Pixelbook. So they're just putting their brands up there instead of the generic headers. I don't know what that means.
No, I wouldn't call this major.
It's, yeah. I mean, okay, I admit I missed it. Google has added a universal watch list for movies and TVs to Google Search. So mobile users can first search what to watch to get Google suggestions organized at the top of search results. And then you can filter it by show. So here's what it looks like. It's on your mobile. So you search for what to watch, and then you'll get some suggestions. I don't know if that's any better than any other what to watch thing, but okay. Maybe Google's got more information. It'll propose stuff really good. I feel like there's a lot of these recommendations. I even get it on YouTube TV, so maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's the YouTube TV version. Okay, and now that's the rump Google changelog.
The rump?
Yeah, rump. Am I misusing that term?
No, I think you're using it right.
Are you talking about the butt?
No. If you have a meeting after a larger meeting, that's called the rump session.
A meeting held after the right, the rump session is.
So that was the rump.
I have never heard of this. How interesting.
It continues after the meeting was adjourned.
The chat room says the tail end. Okay.
The tail. I guess that's why it is the rump, right? That makes sense. But it's the bit after the bigger bit.
When the person you don't like leaves, and then you get the real business done.
So we're going to do from now on a rump change log. Just to
no, it'll never end.
I thought you were going to wait till I leave and then do a rump
twig or twiz. All right,
well,
I want to wrap.
Next week will be a rump twig.
Why?
Because it's after this.
I won't be here.
Oh no!
And it's after this one.
Where the hell are you going? You can't.
Where are you
going to
go? You can't go anywhere.
I'm getting my Botox shots. So
oh good.
I could come back with Botox and COVID.
By the way. She doesn't do this for vanity, ladies and gentlemen. She's just a very tense person.
And if I did do it for vanity, that's just fine.
Right. But look at her forehead. It's seamless anyway. It doesn't matter. She has no lines, although...
Well, right now I have nothing because my video is so blurry.
Yeah, we can't see anything. Yes. Yeah. Okay, it's for your migraines. So good. Good luck. I want to now do the rump... twig, which is where we do the Stacy's thing, Jeff's number, and Leo's tool. Starting with Stacy's thing.
Stacy's looking around like, oh, I
Stacy
don't have a
didn't,
thing.
You don't have to have a thing.
Last week I had two things, but let me
I have
tell
a thing.
You.
Let me do my thing because it's the thing you would
oh,
like.
Do your thing, yeah.
One
okay,
of the
because I have some.
One of the engineers at Twilio, Christina Sunu. She's in the IoT developer community. See, this is right
She's
up your
gonna
alley.
She's going to be on my show next week.
Oh,
yes.
So my thing is your thing. She
no,
decided
thing, yeah.
to build a data tracker for an internet-connected sourdough starter.
This is genius.
And at Twilio, it turns out, I didn't realize this, they have an IoT developer kit. And so she used that. It uses Twilio narrowband, which uses the cell signal. She says, why did I do that? Well, because your Wi-Fi maybe isn't perfectly reliable. It doesn't use a lot of data. It's not very expensive. You can get a Twilio account fairly, that's free, I think, and the developer kit. And then you'll need a LiPo battery. You'll need an Arduino. And you'll need the sourd.io GitHub repo. You also need an MQTT broker of choice, and you have to be, I'm sorry, in the U.S. No sourdough outside of the U.S. allowed. But this is, you know, I mean, honestly, I don't anticipate a lot of people doing this. But it's pretty cute because what you want to do with your sourdough, you need to monitor temperature, moisture, and most importantly, size. And this does all of that. The humidity produced as the yeast respirates is delightfully detectable, she says. We can actually, should we look at her monitor? Let's just see if we can see how her sourdough is going. Oh, look at that. The humidity is spiking. Temperature is very consistent. Well done, Christina. Distance, which I guess is how much it's grown, is field chart 3. I think her sourdough is at a peak performance right now. But the bread monitor, nothing's happening because I guess she's not baking right now.
She probably has not made bread yet.
No, she's too busy making sourdough monitors. I think this is exactly what engineers do when they're stuck at home. They make sourdough bread monitors. I love it.
And she's coming on the show next week, not just to talk about this, but to actually talk about how any of us, you know, I know a lot of people who go and buy Pis or Arduinos, myself included. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to hook this up
right.
and do something
Never
with it.
Never do anything. Yeah.
And then I'm like,
This is incredibly
So she's going to help us get over that hump.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty cool what she did.
And I imagine
it's a nice
3D,
looking thing.
A 3D printer would help a little bit for the enclosure. It goes right there on top of your sourdough, which, by the way, Christina is looking mighty fine. Mighty fine. There you go. She's planning another bread monitor in the future that connects with SuperSIM, which is worldwide. So stay tuned. Stay tuned. I like Twilio.
Yeah, they were a sponsor of my show.
Oh, love them.
I like them a lot.
I love them a lot. In fact, I've met some of their engineers.
This was like a year and a half ago. But,
right.
you know,
no.
I'm like, yeah, go
nice.
Twilio.
Nice. Jeff, do you have a number?
Well, I could do something boring like telling you that Netflix has almost 16 million new subscribers, double what they expected, so everybody can watch Tiger King with Leo. But instead, remember earlier I said we can't say that Twitter says this or Twitter says that. Well, according to Fox News, Twitter is going berserk over the discovery. Something you can make in your Thermomix, Leo.
Yes.
White Castle pate.
What is in White Castle pate?
That is the most disgusting thing. Going through my grandma's church recipe book, 10 White Castle hamburgers, water, and sour cream for topping. Blend burgers in blender, which is where you'd do it, or in a Thermomix, a few at a time. Adding water is needed for a thick, hard, quotes, dough. Spread into lightly greased loaf pan or round mold. Bake at 325 for 45 to 50 minutes. Cool and unmold. Serve with crackers and sour cream.
Actually, it's probably delicious. If I'm gonna do any blending, I'm gonna blend some speculoos cookies and make speculoos butter. Is that not the best thing you've ever had?
Speculoos butter is
the best.
Quite
thing
delicious. I actually think speculoos is a little too sweet.
It is too sweet. It is, but it's still.
I have a hard time with it.
Delicious.
Jeff, I want to vomit now, but I found a thing for y'all.
I always forget stuff
like this.
Good.
But
yes,
I figured this is more of a Leo thing, but since Leo did a Stacey thing, I feel okay.
Fair enough.
We all know about Rosetta at Home and Folding at Home.
Yeah.
Both projects trying to take proteins and analyze them on behalf of science for COVID-19. Yeah. So everybody's like, yeah, I'm going to do this now. Yay. But you can only do it on PCs until Balena. They are a container management software for IoT companies. They actually ported this to ARM. So now you can do these jobs on a Pi or not an Arduino. You do need some pretty significant memory. But now you can do it on some of your random, let's say you bought a Pi and you thought you're going to make a soured IO thing.
But
instead you were like, oh, I'll do it later. Right now you could just put it to work doing some folding at home.
With your old laptop or Raspberry? I do have a spare Raspberry Pi.
Of course you do.
This is a small network right now, only 1,221 computers. Maybe we can add to it. It's foldforcovid.io. Foldforcovid.io.
I know somebody who's going to put that to use in another way.
Oh, yeah?
Or bring in other people to contribute. Let me ask you, why not?
Except that... is this really helping anything, this folding at home or Rosetta? Because it is using a lot of power, like a lot. Like, yeah, I know it's the most powerful computer ever, but is anything coming of this, or are we just all just kind of burning candles
in the darkness? Well, they're assigning jobs and analysis. So there is a central unit that's assigning people to look at various... the idea is... that everybody looks at all this stuff in their spare compute
maybe
time.
Maybe you'll find something.
And maybe we'll find something.
Okay. Like SETI at home found all those aliens.
Well, maybe there are no aliens to find, or maybe they don't want to be found.
Okay. So it's, I'm all right.
Would you want to be found by us?
No.
You want to hide. No.
And maybe we don't want to be found. Let's be real.
I mean, if it's, I don't know the people who put this together. It used to be at Stanford, and then some guy took it, and now it's somewhere else, and I want it to be good and useful, but it is using a non-trivial amount of electricity. So as long as it's good, useful.
So my friend who wants to bring this to another arena to get shared computing power and I were talking about this, and I mentioned things like efforts to deal with analyzing genomes of COVID. Need computing power.
Cool.
Could be useful.
Cool.
Maybe it's not. I mean, it's just using computer. All it is using computing power.
There was a company at CES that used computing power to like heat people's homes while folding. So
thank you, Karsten. He sent me a subreddit. There's great subreddits on Reddit. And this is one I actually follow called Ask Science. And this was posted 8 years ago, but okay.
Oh.
Okay. You know, folding at home has been around for 20 years. Has folding at home really accomplished anything? And a response, again, 8 years ago from a guy who does unequivocally, yes, I do drug discovery One important part is knowing the molecular target, which requires precise knowledge of structural elements of complex proteins. By the way, it's that's the same kind of thing we have to solve with COVID-19. Some of these are solved by X-ray crystallography, but folding at home has solved several knotty problems for proteins that are not amenable to this approach. Bottom line is, we are actively designing drugs based on the solutions of folding at home, and that's just in my particular research. So, and then there's another guy with cancer drug discovery. He says sometimes you really need sheer computing power, and that's what you get from these giant, you know, clusters of computing. So I'm going to amend my cynical comments and say, yes, it's worth doing. So fold for COVID.
Well, there is someone actually in the comments talking about what you talked about. Maybe it's not the most efficient way of going about this, but it's the way we have because all of our super efficient supercomputers are already doing other things.
They're busy doing other things. You know, going
they're
through,
modeling climate change.
Yeah, stuff like that.
Yeah.
I am going to end the show with a fine tweet from Rex Chapman. Quarantined stuntmen. Are you ready for 2 minutes and 17 minutes of stuntmen who don't have any movies to be in, watch, and enjoy? Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this episode of This Week in Rump Google. I thank you for joining me. And I encourage you
17 minutes of this.
There's a lot of it. I encourage you to follow Jeff Jarvis on the Twitter and on Medium and at buzzmachine.com. He is, of course, a highly esteemed holder of the Town Knight Chair for Entrepreneurial Journalism at the Town Knight Center for Entrepreneurial Journalism at the Craig Newmark School for Graduate Journalism. There's somewhere in there. Somewhere in there is the City University of New York. Thank you, Stacey Higginbotham. Always a pleasure. Giga Stacey on the Twitter. And of course, Stacey on IoT.com is her website. Subscribe to her free newsletter and follow them for the IoT podcast. I'm excited. I'm going to listen to the Twilio. Christina is going to be great next time.
She's next week, not
next week on the IoT podcast. You can get all that at StaceyOnIoT.com. Watch. They're still fighting for. So if you aren't watching, what we're seeing here is a bunch of stunt people punching the camera, and then the next stunt man takes over as if he got punched and then responds, what? Oh, he's got to clean his hands first. Okay. Very important. And then responds back.
That was nice talk.
This is actually really, really, really a cute video. Thank you, everybody. We do This Week in Google every Wednesday around 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 20:30 UTC. You can watch us do it live at twit.tv/live. There's also audio there. If you want on-demand shows, go to the website, twit.tv. All of our shows are there on twit.tv. This show is twit.tv/twig. We're also on YouTube. Best thing you could possibly do. And you would be doing me a favor if you did it. Subscribe in your favorite podcast program. That way you'll get the show automatically every Wednesday when it's done.
Subscribe, subscribe, subscribe.
Yes.
Please subscribe.
Thank you. You subscribe.
Even if you watch it live, subscribe because it's good.
It's good. And you want to hear it again. It's the This Week in Zeitgeist show. Sorry about the bad theme music. Did Jason say he'd do some yelling?
No, I don't know. I think he needs the boss to tell him to.
Okay.
That might cost extra.
Yeah, I think that's true. Yeah. Thank you, Stacey. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, everybody. Have a great, safe week. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google.